Welcome to Crossway today. Please join us as we worship God and hear His word.
Lord, our Lord, how majestic is Your name in all the earth. The heavens declare Your greatness. The oceans cry out to You. The mountains, they bow down before You. So I join in the earth and I sing. The heavens declare Your greatness. The oceans cry out to You. The mountains, they bow down before You. So I join in the earth and I give my praise to You.
Sing, I will worship. Choose to worship You this morning.
I will worship You.
I will worship.
I will worship You.
I will worship. I will worship.
I will worship You. Filled with His glory. the Lord Almighty, holy, holy,
holy,
holy, holy is the Lord Almighty, holy, holy,
holy,
holy, holy is the Lord Almighty, holy, holy.
Thank you. go before. You are the last, Lord, you're the encore. Your name's in lights for all to see. The starry hosts declare your glory.
Now, I don't know how you come to this evening, but I have had a couple of friends this week who've had just an awful week. And I've had some other friends and colleagues who've had one of the best weeks of their lives. And when we come together to listen to God, we come with the baggage of the week that has gone before. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. But I'd ask you just to put that aside for a little while and try and engage with what God has got to say to you this evening as we talk about giving, generosity, and money. Now, my personal upbringing with money was not quite as good as it should have been. My first introduction to giving happened when I was a child. Now, I was coerced into giving as a child. It was an outrageous thing, but that's what happened in my family. See, back in England, the coin sizes didn't necessarily kind of relate to the value of the coin. And when I was getting my first pocket money, I used to get this beautiful silver little coin, which was, I think, a sixpence back in those days. And it's kind of this tiny little thing. And then there was this beautiful coin, which was tuppence, which was kind of big and nice. And my brother used to come to me and say, "Why do you want that little coin when you can have this beautiful, big, shiny coin?" So I'd trade my coin and I'd get rid of my money. Now, I worked out one day that he'd been ripping me off. So when I grew up, my understanding and engagement with money maybe wasn't what it should have been. And it's interesting because Scott used the word tight-fisted. We used to use a slightly different phrase from that, but tight-fisted will do great. And that was what I was like. And in fact, I remember one day, this is so embarrassing. I look back at things you do in life, and this one was so embarrassing. I had someone at work come around, and they said, "Would you like to buy some raffle tickets for the Great Ormond Street Children's Appeal?" Now, most of us would engage and think, "Well, that's a good thing to do." But I said, "Well, no, I don't buy raffle tickets because I remember being ripped off by my brother." But actually, it wasn't that. It was because Mum had always brought us up never to gamble in any way. And the only time I'd actually bought raffle tickets, I won a big prize. And instead of being welcomed with open arms, I got told off by my mum and had to go and give the gift to an old lady down the road. Very sad, I know. I've got over it just about. I have counselling every month for that. But I was quite tight-fisted. Anyway, so when she said, "Would you like to buy the tickets?" I just said, no, I don't buy raffle tickets, in a very sort of condescending way. And she said, "Well, that's fine, because you can just give me some money." So I said, "Well, actually, if I give you money, that's the government's job. It's not my job to give you money. And actually, what you're doing is you're stopping the government doing what it should be doing and justified why it shouldn't give." So I came from a background of being a little tight-fisted with money. And to be honest, until I became a Christian, I can't remember giving anything to anyone apart from people in my family. Well, that changed when we became Christians. We became Christians after going to an Alpha course in New Zealand at quite a small church. Now, I'll give you some tips as part of Christian living tonight. And my first one is about what happened when I was at about the second week of the Alpha course. This guy, Mark, was there and he said, "Hey, I've got this book that I've read that you should read. It's wonderful to everyone. Would anyone like to read it?" Now, there was stunned silence in the group. No one saying anything. And it got a little bit embarrassing. And so back then, I kind of wanted to kind of stop the silence and stop the embarrassment. So I said, yeah, I'll read the book. Now I kind of know better that probably Mark was a little bit crazy. And the likelihood was that his book maybe was not something the rest wanted to read because they'd experienced him before. Now, you might get that occasionally in Christian circles. But in this case, the book was transformative. It was a book called When the Spirit Comes by a chap called Colin Urquhart, written in 1974. Well, I got the book in 1996 and I started to read it. And I cannot remember anything in that book at all apart from one section. And this section told the story of an old lady. And the old lady went to a nice church in England, and churches in England all have beautiful spires. That's just how they are. We live in the city now, and if we stand at the top of our house, we can look out and we can see spires everywhere. But spires cost a lot of money. And what happens in England is that when you don't have money and you need a new spire, well, you have an appeal. So the church had an appeal. And the vicar stood up, and he was good at maths, and he'd worked out that if everyone in the congregation gave £25, they could pay for the new spire. So week by week, he gave an account of the fundraising towards the spire. 20% of people had given, 30%, 40%. And it got to a point where actually 99% of the people had given. In fact, there was only one person who hadn't given. And the little old lady, as she tells the story, says she felt the glare of the vicar as he stared at her. She had £25 in her bank account, and that was it. She lived on a pension, and she got by week to week. She lived in state housing, didn't have much money, and the savings she put aside were to buy her children's children birthday presents and Christmas presents. Well, after the fourth week of the vicar bringing up the fact that there was one person left to give in the church, she succumbed and gave in. She went and got her £25 and gave it across to the church. Well, the very next day, she got a cheque for £50 in the post. Now, that in itself is amazing. But what then went on to happen for that old lady is that once she had learned to trust God with her money, he kept replenishing her bank account. Over the next 15 years, as a pensioner, she gave away £75,000 to the work of the kingdom. Now, being good at maths, I worked out 2 weeks in, not really a Christian, that this actually looked quite a good equation from a monetary point of view. And so I go along to church and think, okay, well, we should try giving something. So back then, I knew you were supposed to do something around 10%, and so we worked out what our net pay was, and I talked to Fiona about it, because giving is actually a family thing, I think. It's good to encourage and talk to your family about it, including your children. Anyway, so we gave $40, forgot about it, and then the Wednesday night after that, we went shopping. Now, just to give you some context, we lived in New Zealand at the bottom of the South Island, in fact, almost as far south as you can civilisedly live in the world. That meant it was cold, and the sea in particular was freezing. So people wore wetsuits when they went swimming. And we went to the wetsuit shop and went to buy one. And mine, that I liked, was $129. I got it, tried it on, fitted, I was happy with it, and went to the counter to pay. And the guy says to me, "Sir, I know it says 129 on the label, but tomorrow night we were going to have a sale for our club members, and I was going to put that wetsuit in the sale at $79. And I can't in all conscience sell it to you for 129, so you can have it for $79. I was kind of like, okay, this thing works. Well, that was enough. That was enough for me. Now, spiritually and theologically, that maybe is not quite how it's supposed to work, but it was enough for Fiona and I to start a journey of giving into God's kingdom. And that's a journey we've carried on with today. And I don't say that with pride, because it's not about pride. It's about following what God has called us to do. Sometimes, though, we can get a little confused about this. And I don't want to shock you too much, but actually, God does not need your money. I don't know if you've thought of it like that, but he really, really doesn't need your money. In fact, he's good enough to actually tell us that he doesn't need our money. In Psalm chapter 50, verse 9 to 12, he says, "I have no need of a bull from your stall, or goats from your pens, for every animal of the forest is mine, and the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird in the mountains, and the insects in the fields are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine, and all that is in it." So if God doesn't need our money, why does he go on about this tithing thing? What's he playing at? He's got no needs from us at all. And that confused me for a long period of time, until I started to reflect on, well, if he doesn't want our money, what does he actually want? I kind of go back to these verses when I'm lost and not sure what's going on with God, because Jesus says this is the very core of our faith. And in terms of summarising essentially the commandments, he says this: "What is written in the law?" he replied. And a Pharisee and teacher replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind. And love your neighbour as yourself. So when it comes to money, if God doesn't need our money, what does he want? Well, he wants us to love him with all our heart, soul and mind, and to love our neighbours as ourselves. Now, in terms of loving him, if he's asked for us to give into his kingdom, which he does, and if you go through the Bible, the concept of giving usually starts at about 10% of our income in the Bible. And he sees that as a way of us showing worship to him. He actually says, if you're going to love me, part of what I want you to do is actually do it by showing an action of giving to me. And that part of it actually, in some ways, is a simple equation. Because whilst God doesn't need our money, and in fact care about our money, he cares about us. And he's wise enough to know that we care about our money. Is there anyone in here who doesn't care about their money? Hands up. Well, we all care about our money. In fact, our society defines us by money. We're rich. We're poor. We're middle class. We're lower class. And if we're not careful, we can end up being defined by money, because that's what our society does, as opposed to being defined by God. And why this is a sign of love to him is because he's saying, one of the things that you see is most important to you, I want you to put aside and give to me, because I want to know that I am more important than the money that you have, the goods that you have, the precious things that you hold on to. So firstly, it's a sign of loving him. But probably secondly and more importantly, the reason he wants us to give into his kingdom is to show love for others. Malachi 3:10, if you want to look at giving and tithing, Malachi is a great book to read. And at one point it talks about this. It says, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will be room enough to store it. So God's saying there's this concept of a storehouse. So the money we give, when it's going to God because we're tithing and showing that we honour him, he's not using for himself. He's actually saying put it into a storehouse. And he's saying if you want to show love for others, part of that commitment is to put money into the storehouse, because the storehouse is what feeds us individually. Without a storehouse, we as individuals, as members of the church, aren't fed. If we decided tomorrow at Crossway, well, let's just switch off the tithing, let's just switch off the giving, what would happen? Well, Dale would be going down to Centrelink and signing on. The worship band would be up here, probably with no electric guitars, doing their thing. The people who look after running the facilities, they'd be out of a job. The place would get dirty, it'd get filthy. The evangelism and the call to the nations, well, how's that going to happen if we don't have money going into the storehouse to fund evangelism? And we talk about the concept of a mission of reach the city, reach the nation, reach the nations, and that does not happen without money. And God is saying to us, if we want to love him and love others, we have to put money into the storehouse, because the storehouse is a source of feeding for his kingdom. Now, this doesn't happen in reality until you see what happens when God has money and the profound impact he makes with it. And the joy that we should participate in when we've given money to something. Several years ago, Crossway, and some of you will remember this, gave money to a leadership centre in Agra for one of the Christmas appeals. $250,000, I think, was raised. And Dale and I and Fiona were lucky enough to go there for the opening. Now, when we went there, we saw a beautiful facility, which was nice, but it's not about the buildings. What we saw was young pastors being trained to go out and reach their communities and bring the gospel message of Jesus into India. Now, that food came from our storehouse into theirs to to feed them, to grow God's kingdom. And we get to participate in that. And the joy of seeing those people in India who have come to faith, come to see God, is incredible. But without our giving, none of that happens. Can you imagine what your life would be like if you didn't have a church like Crossway? For me and for Yona, there's been times where it has profoundly impacted our lives. That only happens when we honour God with the money that we have and that we give across to Him. Now, some of you might say, well, that's all very well for you to say because you've got a lot of money. I'm paid well, and I admit it, and yes, we do all right financially. And so we're in a position to give. Now, some of you won't be in that position, and I realise many come from a different perspective. But our lives haven't always been like that. And I want to share some stories about the reality of how God looks after us and cares for us when we honour Him in this way. When we left England, my mum was a good Christian. We weren't Christians at the time. She gave us some presents. One thing was my dad's old Bible, and she wrote me a note in a little card, and I've still got the card. Not being one to kind of give one verse, she gave us two chapters as a kind of guide for our Christian walk that she was hoping we would follow, which was the whole of Proverbs 3 and Proverbs 4. And one of the verses that struck me in Proverbs 3 was this: trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways submit to Him, and He will make your path straight. Now, I want to say that my experience and our experience in our house is that has been very true when it comes to money. Because sometimes it's hard to trust God with our money and our finances. There was a time for Fiona and I when we didn't have as much money as we might have today. And about 7 or 8 weeks out from Christmas in, I think, 1997, twin daughters, Jess and Emily, needed some new shoes. Their shoes literally had kind of died. They were just awful. They couldn't get around in them. In New Zealand, it was lucky because you can get away with bare feet in New Zealand, but you don't do that over here. But they needed shoes for school. Well, we had no money at all. Literally not enough money to spend more than about $20 on a pair of shoes. And we knew that it was going to be hard to find shoes for the girls that were less than that, that fitted well, that were going to look after their feet. But more than that, Christmas is around the corner, and we had literally no money to buy kids, and we had, I think, 4 or possibly 5 by then. Fiona will correct me when I get that wrong. We had a few kids hanging around anyway. And we had no money to buy them Christmas presents. And worse than that, my family were coming over from England. And you know that horrible brother I talked about who swapped the coins with me? Well, he's got tons of money. And so he was expecting us to go away on holiday with him somewhere really nice. And we had no money. And we're getting to the point where we're going to have to say, no Christmas, no shoes, and no holiday. Well, we went to look in the shops to work out how much the shoes would be so we could save up for them. And we went to a shop up in Dunedin, which was near where we lived, and went and talked to the lady in the shop and said, we're looking for some shoes for the girls. And she kind of got out what they had, and they were like $40-$50. And then she turned around and she measured the shoes and she goes, I think I got some shoes which were in the sale that will fit the girls. So she went off and she found these shoes, which were beautiful pairs of boots, and they're kind of cute for twins because they're a similar style but different colours, so they looked really nice. And they were down from like $120 to $10 each. Wow. And whilst we didn't have much money, we had $20 to be able to buy the shoes. And so we bought the shoes, and we were in like a shopping centre praising God like crazy, going, God, you are so wonderful because you have stood by us. And in that time, we never gave up giving to the church or considering that we should stop doing that because it would have been so easy to do. But when you look at these words that say, trust in the Lord, don't lean on your own understanding, our own understanding would have been, well, forget giving, forget the money we put into the church because the kids need shoes. That's human understanding, isn't it? And that's what we would have done. But actually we said, We're going to trust in what God says, and we'll trust hopefully that somehow he does something. We got those shoes and we were just over the moon. Well, it didn't stop there. That afternoon, we went to my grandmother's for afternoon tea. We used to go see her most Saturdays. There's nothing else to do in New Zealand apart from going to see Gran. So we go up to Gran's house and we're having afternoon tea. And she's kind of in a funny way, actually. I don't know what was wrong with her, but we worked out what was wrong with her. She turned around and said, look, I just got given this dividend that I don't really need from some of the shares that I own, and I wanted you guys to have some of it. And she wrote out a cheque for $7,000 for us. Now, that meant we could have Christmas and we could go away with the family. Now, I'm not saying that God is going to do that to you all the time, but what I am saying is if you honour God and trust him with your money and put it into his kingdom and show that you love him by obeying his commands and that you're prepared to actually love others by putting money into his storehouse to go out and help others, he will honour that. Now, I haven't met anyone in the Australian church who has starved. I remember one day at our church, just to give you context, and particularly for people who don't have a lot of money, what the storehouse can be like for you. One day, there was a lovely girl who came to church here. She came to faith through the Alpha course, but she came to faith through one of our evangelists. And Liz, you might know Liz is a star, and she used to evangelise with everyone. And she brought Joe along to Alpha. She became a Christian. She had some serious problems in her life, and her husband was the biggest problem in her life at the time. He wasn't a particularly nice guy to her, and she was trying to work out how to live. She was from the Philippines, didn't have a job, had three young kids, had to look after them, had a house. That's tough enough. But he decided, well, if you're not going to live with me because it was just such a nightmare for her, well, I'm going to make it hard for you. So he got their car, which was a $12,000 car, took it and wrote it off on purpose. So Joe came to church and actually came down the front and was talking. And Mike Gretschko, who some of you remember, was here praying. And he actually heard what Joe had to say. And he turned around and said, can anybody help Joe? Well, it took 2 weeks for the church to club together, and it was actually done through two life groups, to buy Joe a new car. And that is the reality of the storehouse, because the storehouse gives to us. Now, you might be in a place where you don't need the storehouse at the moment, and there's times in your life where actually you feel like that, but actually we all need teaching all the time. We all need support all the time. But there will be times, and I talked about a friend of mine who's having a tough, tough week, where the church will be the only place you can go for support, for counselling, sometimes for some people for food, for love, in some cases for freedom from addictions. Without funding, that just doesn't happen. And it's an opportunity for us to engage in the extension of God's kingdom. Now, funding things, I actually find is quite fun. And in fact, the most enjoyable thing I've had is often in response to funding things. We work with an orphanage in Delhi in India. And one night I was sitting in a restaurant with the kids. We're having dinner and I get this phone call from Fiona, who's in India. And I'm like, there must be something wrong that she's phoning. She phones up and she goes, the girls wanted to talk to you. And she said they wanted to know how Uncle was, so I said, well, why don't we just phone them? So the girls, and there's 30 of them, turn around and they're all on the screen waving, going, hi, Uncle, how are you going? And the joy of those girls being freed from living on the streets in Delhi, being taken into a Christian home where they're taught Christian words, and those kids will go up as Christian ministers and will go out and spread the gospel, that joy is just unbelievable. And we get to participate in God's work in everything that we give into. When you give to this church, when you give to the nations, you're part of God moving and changing this world. When you give into a particular ministry at Christmas time, that money was going to India again. You will radically transform that nation. And how joyous for you, because forevermore there will be people who are grateful to you because you honoured God with your money, but you loved them as well and you didn't even know them. That is the power of giving. However, now I'm not going to look at anyone in particular here. I'm quite good at maths. And I sat down the other day and I worked out, well, if everyone at Crossway was on the average income, and everyone at Crossway was listening to God and giving in to the church, how much would our church budget be? Because at the moment, our church budget is what we think we're going to be given. It's not how much we should be tithing. Well, it's actually God's eyes, is that our church budget is what we should be tithing. Now, God's budget for our church, when you do the math, is somewhere between $12 million and $15 million. Now, Scott, you'll be able to tell me, I think at the moment, $7.5 or $8 million? Okay, so there's a gap there because we're not giving into his kingdom. How embarrassing that our church is in debt because some of us have chosen not to give into his kingdom. Now, I don't want to give you a hard time about it, but what I want to do is say we participate. People became members tonight, and we participate because we want to do God's work. And even though it's probably one of the hardest decisions you'll make, giving into his kingdom and giving as he calls us to with a tithe, and I believe the tithe's kind of where you start, is what will empower this church and allow it to grow. Now, if you're not in the position of giving at the moment, and you haven't even started, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how you can start. Now, some of you here will be kind of thinking, this is some kind of trickery because those people in church are after my money. Now, fortunately for me, I don't have any vested interest, so I can say what I want and get away with it. But some people see it like that, and some people kind of see the tithe as some kind of trickery to take away some of my hard-earned cash to people who are going to take it and squander it away and not look after it responsibly. Some people look at it from the point of view that I can't afford to give. I haven't got enough money. It's too hard to give. And so I'm going to choose not to give. And some people make another choice, which is to say, I'm going to give outside of my local church. Now, that's a choice you can make, but all I can say is, in our experience, our view has been in our house that we're members of this church, and therefore we give into this church, because this is our storehouse. And there will be a day that we may need the call on the storehouse, and I know that it will be there for us. And we've chosen to give here because it's our home. And if we're members, we participate. Some of you will be sitting here going, well, I already give and I'm kind of happy and life's kind of good for me, so I don't need to worry about this. I want to talk to you particularly about assets. I was really lucky a couple of weeks ago. Edie actually texted me while I was in Las Vegas, which is not a particularly nice place, and she's going, are you okay? And I was like, you can't be okay in Vegas. It's just an assault on every sense in every way. But after going to Vegas, I went to Los Angeles, and I went to John Paul Getty's museum. John Paul Getty's museum is stunning. It's got 700 acres in Los Angeles, right next door to Beverly Hills. So this is a seriously expensive piece of land with a seriously expensive museum on top of it. Well, I got told the story of how the museum came about. He collected art, and for the last 20 years of his life, he spent nearly all his money on collecting art. And this is what he did. He saw things that he liked, he bought them, and he sent them to America, to go to a ranch property that he owned. Most of them sat there, unwrapped, for the next 20 years. He was scared of flying, he lived in the United Kingdom, and he didn't want to go to America because he'd have to fly. But he kept buying this art, and he'd buy more and more and more art. Interestingly enough, some of the art he bought was some of the earliest manuscripts of the Bible. And there's some beautiful art from around the time of the Book of Kells, which is around 1000 AD. These are beautiful pieces of art, and the people who put them together were glorifying God through creation. If only he had opened those books and seen how God was glorified through the art. But he never even looked at them. In fact, at the end of his life, he had $3 billion worth of art stored in a warehouse, which he'd never even looked at. Well, we can all go and look at that today, but it didn't do him much good, did it? Now, the reason I bring that up is that we tend to separate income from assets quite often. But how we treat assets is quite important. And one day, and please forgive me if you're this person, but I was down in our car park. There's this pokey little red car down there. This person doesn't need to forgive me. It's a tiny little thing, and I know it costs about $10,000 because Dale drives around in it. I have been in it, so I can't say I wouldn't be seen dead in it. But I have been in it. It's a nice car. Right next to it is a Maserati. Not a very good parker because it was actually parked across two spaces. And I looked at it, and I went up and I said to Dale, Dale, there's a Maserati sitting next to your car. Go and find out whose that is because they've got some money. I actually have no problem with God having blessed someone enough to buy a Maserati. In fact, if God has done that for someone, that is wonderful. And praise him that he has blessed that person so much. But if he's put more money into his car than he's put into the kingdom of God, he needs to think about that. If we put more money into our assets than we put into the kingdom of God, we all need to think about that. And I can guarantee you one thing. If you go home tonight and look at all those precious things you have, the cars, the things in your house, tell me which one of those is meaningful to you, truly meaningful, that you couldn't live without, that you really, really need. And for most of you, the answer actually will be virtually none. The Maserati doesn't matter. The furniture doesn't matter. The televisions don't matter. The things that we buy to keep up with the people next door really don't matter. The only things that matter in our lives are the people around us, which is why God is saying to us, I want you to love others with your money. So if you're asset rich, I'd say to you, there's a responsibility to go and look at your assets and say, can they be better used in God's kingdom if I actually sought his kingdom first with the assets that I've bought, or if I sought my kingdom first? Now, I'm going to close off on a few tips for you. If you haven't started giving when you're a young person, you get your first job, do yourself a favor and just start giving electronically on your first job, on your first paycheck. It's very simple to do because it becomes harder and harder and harder. And if you don't believe it, go and find an old person who hasn't been giving and ask them how easy it is to start. If you are giving but you haven't really reflected on how much I give, can I ask you to actually go through and commit to look at your money and say, can I do more for the kingdom? Can I do more to love others and show that I'm loving God with the finances that I have? If you're one of those people who think money is going to be impossible to get to give, or it's going to be too hard in your household, can I just encourage you to do what I did when I was a 30-year-old and just try? Now, starting with a tithe for most of us on our incomes, if we haven't given, is actually quite hard. Just start with $10, then go to 20, and then go to 30, and see if you can build up to giving, because you won't miss that money. You won't need the things you were going to buy with it, and you can love others with the money you put into God's kingdom. When you give, I'd also encourage you to actually give, which means the money is no longer yours. So you give into this storehouse. Let the storehouse decide how it spends. Because it's not our money anymore. We've given it across as a gift to God. He can decide how it's spent. And trust that God will use that money well. Too many people in our society, and particularly people who are not Christians, actually give money with requests for how the money is used. That's not a gift. That's a demand. When we give, we actually need to give across completely, which is give it away and trust that God is going to use it in the ministry it's given to. At times, giving will be tough. At times, you'll want to give up and say, this is too hard, we've got too much upon us. At those times where it's impossible, can I encourage you to hold on? And can I encourage you also, even tonight when you go home, when you look at your money, take some choices to be free to give so it hurts. Because it's easy to give out of our excess, but it's hard to give when it hurts. But when we give and it hurts, I believe that's often when God shows us how powerfully he will use that money and how powerfully he will respond to him when we obey what he's called us to do. The choice about giving is entirely yours. No one is going to know what you give or what you don't give. It's truly between you and God. But the only person who misses out when they don't give is you. God is not going to miss out. He's got all the money he needs. The one who will miss out most is you. And what you'll miss out on is the ability to have the fullness of life that you can experience when you obey his commands, and the joy that giving truly is. He doesn't set this as a rule to bind us. He sets giving as a rule to free us from the power of money. The choice is yours: be controlled by money or be controlled by God. Thank you very much.
Grace, what have you done? Murdered for me on that cross, accused in absence of wrong, my sin washed away in your blood. Too much to make sense of it all. I know that your love breaks my fall. The scandal of grace, you died in my place. So my soul will live, all to be
relationship with God, we have people waiting to speak with you and to pray for you. Our telephone lines are open for the next 30 minutes, so why not phone us now on 03 9886 3700. To buy a copy of today's message on CD, send a cheque for $6 to Crossway Resource Centre, 2 Vision Drive, Burwood East, Vic 3151. Remember, our telephone help is open right now for the next 30 minutes on 03-9886-3700. Our Sunday services, including Children's Church, run at 8:45 a.m., 10:15 a.m., 11:45 a.m. and 6 p.m. at the Crossway Centre in Burwood East. We also hold Cantonese, Mandarin, Indonesian and Korean services, plus satellite services at Craigieburn and Moreland, youth on Friday nights and young adults on Tuesdays. To help support the cost of producing this weekly radio program, send your donation to Crossway Radio Ministry, 2 Vision Drive, Burwood East, Vic 3151. For more information about Crossway, visit us on the web at crossway.org.au.
Jesus, there's no one besides you forever.